Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week we'll hear about the Bay Area Now 7 Performance Festival at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts from Isabel Irigoyen, the Yerba Buena Center's Associate Director of Performing Arts, and from Mark Baruti Joseph, Performing Arts Curator. More from the Music Moves Festival at ODC, choreographers Pearl Merrill and Randy Pave join me in studio. And Music at Menlo is in its concluding weekend of concerts. Cellist Dimitri Atapin is here to share details about that. Plus, critic Peter Robinson reviews A Most Wanted Man and offers some activities for some visitors that you might be having here in San Francisco. Stay with us. ODC continues its Music Moves Festival, nearly a month of diverse performances about the relationship between music and dance. Last week, we spoke with Brenda Way and Christy Bolingbroke about the planning for the festival and some of their involvement. And this week, I'm pleased to welcome a couple of the key artists involved in performances this coming week, Randy Pave and Pearl Merrill. Pearl Merrill is an actress, dancer, and choreographer who is trained at UC Santa Cruz and at BATS, Bay Area Theater Sports, as well as Upright Citizens Brigade in Los Angeles. Here in San Francisco, Pearl's work has been shown at various nightclubs and various performing arts venues and festivals such as ODC, the Women on the Way Festival, the Traveling Jewish Theater, and others. Her newest dance piece is a rather amusing short film called Crunch Pop, which you can see on some popular social media outlets, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Pearl won an Isadora Duncan Dance Award in Izzy in 2013 for Best Ensemble Performance 2011-12. For her piece Missed Connections. Her work MOC Modern On Command, Somebody's Confessional, will have its world premiere next week. A pleasure to welcome Pearl to Open Air.
Thanks for having me.
Choreographer Randy Pave has been based in the San Francisco Bay Area for more than two decades. Her New York State time served includes training at Elmira College and SUNY Brockport. She's also studied dance at UC Davis and in India. She founded Pave Dance, a contemporary dance company based in Oakland, back in 2001. And her work, Soil, will be performed next Thursday through Saturday. Randy, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much.
Sure. Now, the idea behind this year's festival is, according to Christy Bolingbroke, who was here last week, was to feature music choices that teach us how to view dance and choreography, that shows us how to listen to music. So I'm curious about both of you, how that theme ties into your works. Maybe we can start with you, Randy.
Well, I'm working with two live musicians who also composed some of the music that goes with Soil. Elijah Wallace is a pianist and composer, and Chris Evans is a cellist and composer. Mm-hmm. And they worked, I think, with three out of the five solos that are part of the show. They also play during the transitions. So it was a collaboration with them. They were a part of creating the whole show, so they had a big hand in what Soil is really all about. Mm-hmm. Two of the pieces have music that was already existed, but was the pieces are a bit older, and they were choreographed by other choreographers, and those pieces were created for those pieces as well. It's just that they're recorded. So I think all of the music for Soil are original compositions.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. And the there's got to be a story behind the title Soil. Can you maybe share the story behind the dance?
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about aging, and
what was that?
And the fact that I was setting out to perform five solos. The original show was going to last about 50 minutes at the age of 53, and it was daunting to say the least, but it just became this incredible challenge. I had thought I was done performing and got this crazy idea to do this project, and so the idea of Soil was sort of about staying grounded and also ideas about life and death, mortality. Lost a few people in the last couple of years and have that's been heavy on my mind. So sort of a where do we come from? What are we doing on this ground, this earth? What is soil? Where does it come from? It's stardust. Nobody really knows much about it. And where do we go to when we leave?
So, and how are our bodies surviving as they are as we age?
Yeah, and we are part of the earth. So.
Pearl Merrill, your work also has something to do with some body image, if I'm not mistaken, and how the body is perceived in popular culture.
Yes. In my piece, I actually, in total contrast to Randy, all the songs that we're using are not original songs. Most of them are recognizable. Some of them are pop songs that we might hear all the time on the radio. And I'm really interested in taking these recognizable songs and creating worlds or associations through the songs that maybe aren't the associations that we hear when we listen to them. So almost by taking the song and literally interpreting the lyrics to the point where it's so ridiculous that you kind of turn the song on its head and subvert the common associations that we have with the song, I'm really interested in that relationship between song and choreography. So a lot of the songs we will interpret to the point of being so literal, like Katy Perry, Dark Horse. One of the lyrics in the song is, "So you want to play with magic." So that, for me, became a starting point of how can we play with magic? How can our ensemble, what does magic look like in our hands? What does magic feel like in our bodies? What characters in life want to be magical and play with magic? So it became this total parody a little bit of the song, in which we start reading books on the beach and then start this really bad magic show with towels and just go all over, you know. And so just kind of a really deep exploration into a song to kind of make people listen to the actual lyrics, because I think often we listen to music and sometimes don't hear what they're saying, just might hear the beat or hear, you know, or have a feeling that we have when we hear it, but I'm interested in really exploring literally what it's saying.
It seems like your work is gearing towards more a humorous aspect of the lightheartedness of body image and pop culture.
I think I use humor.
Almost parody or not? Or
yeah, it sometimes comes in the form of parody or satire, but I think I'm really interested in humor or comedy as a vehicle to relay a sometimes deeper message too. I think that it's a really great vehicle for that. We definitely use our bodies in a way that can reflect pop culture sort of imagery, but we also totally shift and juxtapose it to maybe bring up a question of the different ways we can respond to songs like that.
Mm-hmm. That's Pearl Merrill. Her work called MOC, Modern On Command, Somebody's Confessional, will have its world premiere on the 10th and 11th of this month, this Sunday at 7, Monday at 7 and 9 p.m. So let's talk about this Modern On Command piece a little bit.
Sure. I'd love to.
All right.
Well, Modern On Command, the idea of the group is to incorporate elements of theater improvisational structures, of creating spontaneous performance, and then fuse it with sort of a modern dance flair. So in a theater improv context, a dancer or performer might ask an audience for a suggestion, and then based on that suggestion, you might perform a scene. Theater-wise, I'm like, when I was thinking about Mock, I was like, well, how can we make modern dance with that? And my interest in comedy lends itself to that, because I feel like spontaneous modern dance can be really funny and often takes on a very interpretive dance, if you can think of that. That's just really funny. So those two worlds fusing together was what the idea of the company Mock was about. In terms of this show, what we do is incorporate audience confessions with our own confessions and interweave them throughout the show to create a series of different worlds based on those confessions.
Neat.
Yeah.
That's Pearl Merrill. I'm also talking with Randy Povey, who has a very different approach to contemporary dance. It's nice to hear a contrasting approach to bringing dance to the world. And what else is Pove Dance doing as part of this festival?
This is it, Soil. It's a shared program with choreographer Kate Weir, who's mm-hmm. coming up from New York. So I do the first half, and Kate does the second half.
Mm-hmm. How many dancers are involved?
How many dancers? I have, due to an injury, actually, the solo show has become four different dancers performing these solos. So I've got four dancers on my end, two musicians, and Kate, I'm actually not sure. I think maybe four dancers on her end.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the effect of aging on the body. Mm-hmm. Is Pove Dance addressing that in their other works in Oakland, or is that just one aspect of what you do?
Only the show.
That's the show.
Pretty much it. Yeah, we generally the dancers that I work with tends to be a wide range of ages, but we don't really address age as an issue. Mm-hmm. Everybody dances. Mm-hmm.
And what's coming up for the fall season then for you?
We're going back into the studio to start a new project called Strangers Become Flowers. It'll premiere in January of 2016.
We have a little bit of music from Soil. Maybe we could hear some of that now. What are we going to... Why don't you set this up for us?
I think it's from a piece called She Screams Like a Girl, which is probably the lightest moment in the concert. It's actually a cover of Over the Rainbow that was created by a composer up in Portland. It's choreographed by Greg Bielemeyer, and it'll be performed by Peiling Gao in this particular show. She wears a swirly Oompa Loompa kind of dress, a wig. She smokes, she bowls, she can't find her rainbow. She ends up pregnant and staggering off stage.
Let's hear a little bit of that music, and then we'll have more with Pove Dance and with Pearl Merrill. From the music you'll hear in Soil, part of Randy Pave's presentation as the ODC Music Moves Festival moves along through this month of August. Some really neat stuff there. I really enjoy that. I want to get back to Pearl to talk a little bit about a couple of things that I saw online of yours.
Sure.
One of which is called, Crunch Pop. Can we talk about Crunch Pop a little bit?
Sure. Crunch Pop was actually just a really fun project that I started with my friend Alexander Steinhaus, and we basically just wanted to create sort of a workout culture satire that we filmed in three different locations in the Bay Area, and it involved food and bright colored costumes, and it was a blast to create, and it just started as a fun project. And then we put it on YouTube, and actually it got us a really cool gig. ABC Family contacted us through that video, and we ended up competing on this really silly and fun show called ABC Family's Dancing Fools, which was a clip show. And based on that video, they brought us into that show, and we competed against another group for a live studio audience and won a prize. So just kind of one of those amazing instances where you just put something into the
ether,
cybersphere, yep. And it just creates this result that we never expected, and it was so much fun.
That's great. If you look up, you can see that video at Pearl, the number 4, Pearl pearl4pearl.com, pearl4pearl.com, or just search for Crunch Pop. I'm sure it'll come up at YouTube.
Yes.
And you have to tell me about when the next Critical Ass in Dolores Park is going to take place.
I will definitely. Critical Ass was put on hold a bit for Mock, this show coming up, because we had so much rehearsals, but I will definitely let you know.
What is the concept of Critical Ass?
Critical Ass it started as a really fun, free, spandex-clad workout in the park, and it was sort of a way to fuse wanting to hang out with your friends, spend a beautiful sunny day in the park, and get a good workout. So it was kind of killing three birds with one stone, and it was a blast. Yeah.
we'll keep our ears peeled for that, or our cheeks peeled for
Sounds
that
good.
For the next one on that one. Pearl Merrill, I wish you a wonderful performance this weekend of your Modern On Command, Somebodies. Randy Pove, thank you for also coming in today to talk about your works, which will be on the 14th and 15th as part of the ODC Festival Music Moves.
Thank you so much.
Of course. And more about the festival, including the West Coast debut of Dance Higginbotham, which is tonight. You can see all the information about the rest of the festival at odcdance.org. Touch of Dvorak to introduce this next segment around Dvorak, which has been the theme of this year's Music at Menlo, the San Francisco Bay's premier chamber music festival and institute. It's in its last weekend of its 12th season, which started on July 18th and runs through this Saturday. Led by founders and esteemed performers David Hinkle and Wu Han, the festival is held on the campus of Menlo School on the San Francisco Peninsula. Around Dvorak has focused on the unfolding dynamic at the end of the Romantic era between the Viennese classical tradition and the passionate national expressions of a generation of Central European composers. We heard from Gloria Chen, the director of the Chamber Music Institute, at the beginning of the festival. And this week, one of the artists involved in these last concerts joins me in studio now. Cellist Dmitri Atapin is a faculty member of Music at Menlo's 2014 Chamber Music Institute Young Performers Program. He studied at the St. Petersburg Conservatory in Spain, as well as at the University of Michigan and Yale. Dmitri has appeared in festivals around the globe and with such prestigious organizations as the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, where he will begin a 3-year residency in 2015. I imagine taking a leave from his current position as cello professor at the University of Nevada, Reno. We'll maybe talk about that. Dmitri, welcome to Open Air.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you so much.
Of course. So given that you brought a recording from one of the previous Music at Menlo's that you performed on, I take it you are a Music at Menlo veteran yourself.
I would even say that I'm a little bit of a product of Music at Menlo. I first came to Music at Menlo in 2008 as one of the international program students, and I have been coming back to the festival as a faculty member for every year since then.
Very nice. What was that that first festival? What was that like for you?
It was an incredible experience, and the Music at Menlo is truly a unique festival in the country, if not the world, because of the incredible intensity and richness of the musical experience that you can enjoy. there are three tiers of participants, so to say. There's the young performers, who this year there are 33 of them, from ages 8 to 18. There's the international program artists, who are conservatory-level students from all around the world. There are 11 of them joining us this year. And then there's the what we call artists or senior artists, who give the main stage performances every night.
So you've kind of graduated to that point, right?
Pretty much.
You're performing in this eighth main concert program this coming Friday and Saturday.
Yes.
Now, what have your other responsibilities been at Music at Menlo this year at the level that you're at?
Well, my main responsibility this year is to supervise and take care of the young performers, artists, and also of their concerts. They happen every Saturday. This coming Saturday, they're going to have a blast performing for everybody at 12 o'clock. And this is basically a marathon performance that we are preparing them day by day, and we are basically working with the kids.
And the overall theme around Dvorak has been interwoven throughout the entire festival time with the young kids as well?
Absolutely. There is a big concentration on the repertoire. Every piece is individually tailored for every young performer. And this last program, we're going to have works of Dvorak's contemporaries like the Souk Quintet or the Eastern European roots like the Arensky Quintet. So there's a lot of influences by Dvorak. Of course, two works are Dvorak's himself.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, it looks like the Piano Quintet number 2 in A major is the major work on this coming Friday and Saturday's concert.
Yes, that is the closing work of the Friday and Saturday concert. It's truly a masterpiece by Dvorak. I would say that it really kind of a supreme example of his chamber music. It covers many, many aspects of who Dvorak is as a composer, both his romantic sway, and then there's the beautiful Dumka, Serene, Czech second movement, and then there's a very brilliant Furiant dance, and then folkish finale, not without a fugue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I've got to have that in there.
Yes.
So also this weekend, actually tonight, there's an Encounter 4, which is called Forbidden Music, led by Ara Guzelimian. Thank you very much. Tonight at 7:30 at the Martin Hall, Martin Family Hall and Menlo School, which focuses on the impact of the world wars on a whole generation of composers that were either perished or fled during World War II.
Right. And Ara Guzelimian is the dean of the Juilliard School of Music, and he will be providing the insight on the history of both the life of the musical pieces and the lives of the composers as this ripple effect of the Second World War was going through the Eastern Europe, and also many of the composers were fleeing to the America.
Mm-hmm. And Erwin Schulhoff is on the Friday and Saturday program, and he figures prominently in this group of composers, doesn't he?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Schulhoff.
Yes, well, Schulhoff is a very interesting character because he was a child prodigy. Child prodigy, and he also kind of integrated many eclectic musical styles of the time. He moved to Vienna, and he also was in Germany. The piece that we are performing on the Friday and Saturday concert is a kind of a darker aspect of Schulhoff, showing the winds of the time in the 1920s Germany. And also his music is very much influenced by jazz influence. So there's the rhythmic drive and the jarring dissonances, very interesting composition, which we are enjoying very much performing.
Mm-hmm. Saturday's program also includes works, a work by Bedřich Smetana as part of this final program, the Andantino or the Bohemian Fantasy from one of his works from the homeland.
Yes, it's a very intimate work for piano and violin, and it truly kind of shows where Dvorak grew from, because Smetana is probably the first nationalist Czech composer.
Mm. Sounds like a wonderful program. Friday and Saturday at Menlo. Dmitri Atopin is one of the artists involved with this chamber music performance, the final two concerts of the full Music at Menlo Festival. Information about the festival at music, and the word at Menlo, musicatmenlo.org. What's happening for, I understand you're going to be doing this residency with the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. That's fantastic. Also involved with David Finkel in Wuhan.
Yes, that's a very exciting development, and I'm looking very much forward to joining for many performances, both in New York and across the country, starting in the 2015 season, 2015-2016.
So does that mean you have to take a little leave from Reno, or are you going to go back and forth? Or?
It just means that I'm going to go a lot of back and forth and probably expand my days to 30 hours every day.
Oh, my gosh. Well, a lot of frequent flyer miles.
Yes, great. Absolutely.
Well, I wish you wonderful performances here, and congratulations on the upcoming residency with Chamber Music Society Lincoln Center. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much, and I hope that many of your listeners will join us for the closure of the festival.
Indeed.
Which will be truly a firework set of events.
Remaining events, music@menlo.org. We're going to go out actually with some Foray, because you are featured in this performance on the Music at Menlo label of from the Music at Menlo, which...
Last year.
Yes, it was last year. And so here's a brief excerpt from the piano quartet, number 2 in G minor, opus 45, music of Gabriel Fauré. Among the musicians, Dimitri Atapin. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Music of Gabriel Fauré, performed by, among others, Dimitri Atapin, my guest for the Music at Menlo segment here on KALW Open Air. Good afternoon. I'm David LaTulipe, your host for said program. Still to come, Peter Robinson will be sharing some movie details from A Most Wanted Man, and we'll offer some activities for visitors to San Francisco in case you've got friends and wondering what to do with them. Next, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening out at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Bay Area Now 7's core concept is to experiment with new approaches to traditional curatorial structures that highlight collaboration within our own region's cultural ecosystem and which push beyond the boundaries of the performance stage towards a more multidisciplinary celebration of some of the most exciting artistic voices in the Bay Area. Now, that's a lofty goal for a weekend of performances, but to share some of those details, I'm pleased to welcome a couple of the people responsible for making it all happen. Cuban-born Isabel Irigoyen contributes as a music curator for the Yerba Buena Center Performing Arts Department, with an emphasis on creative music and groundbreaking artists in all genres, presenting names that are familiar to us now, like Amy X. Newberg, Mason Bates, and Joan Renault, among many others. Welcome to you, Isabel.
Thank you so much for having us here.
Of course. She works very closely with Director of Performing Arts Mark Bamuti Joseph, who also joins me in the studio. Mark's originally from New York City, is an arts activist currently living in Oakland. He's a National Poetry Slam champion, which we'll have to talk about a little bit, I think. Broadway veteran, and has received a number of commissions to create new works. Among his many honors, he was named one of America's top young innovators in the arts and sciences in 2007 and graced the cover of Smithsonian Magazine. He was also an inaugural recipient of the United States Artists Rockefeller Fellowship in 2006, which annually recognizes 50 of the country's greatest living artists, and one of 21 artists to be named to the inaugural class of Doris Duke Artists. Joseph, welcome to you as well.
Peace. Great to see you.
So Poetry Slam, let's start there.
What
is that all about?
Yeah, well, I'm a child of hip-hop. I was born in the same place and the same time as hip-hop culture was. And in the late 90s, I think I was one of many folks that grew dissatisfied with the general direction of hip-hop and really wanted to codify the work in a different way. And the Poetry Slam became a great vehicle for that. At the same time, I was teaching at a small private school in Marin, and the way that I was able to engage my students a little bit more dynamically was to encourage them to write poetry in dialogue with the Great Gatsby or J.B. or whatever it is that we were reading. And so education, hip-hop kind of distilled in the Poetry Slam space, and I was fortunate enough to represent San Francisco at the National Poetry Slam.
Fantastic.
Yeah, fun times.
Yeah. And there's more of that ahead for you?
Probably not ahead, but it is kind of encompassing of the work that we do at Yerba Buena Center insofar as, you know, the Poetry Slam is deeply tied to community in a different kind of way, in a more visceral and enlivened way. And the work that we present at Yerba Buena Center features MacArthur geniuses and, you know, leaders in the performing arts sphere of all kinds. But we believe that unless it's tied back and inscribed to the mores and direction of community, that it might lack a certain import in terms of ethics and morality, right? So we want to tie the amazing work that we present to the amazing ecology in which we present that work. And that, I think, is exemplified by Bay Area Now.
Mm-hmm. That's Mark Bamuti Joseph, performing arts curator, here with Isabel Irigoyen, YBCA's Associate Director of Performing Arts. Isabel, I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about the unique venue that is the Yerba Buena Center. It's a perfect place for this kind of cross-cultural, cross-disciplinary
We are so blessed to have this incredible center. You know, it is really, truly at the center of the city, in the center of the city, with the Yerba Buena, with the beautiful Yerba Buena Gardens and our two buildings, the 757-seat theater, Yerba Buena Center's theater, and our forum gallery building where we have so many wonderful exhibitions and community engagement programs and performing arts. So it's really a blessing.
Well, let's talk about specifically what has been chosen for this weekend festival, Bay Area Now 7.
I think it's really a very interesting festival because, again, we really wanted to create a venue for the community to weigh in on who should be part of this festival. And we really wanted to democratize the curatorial process. So we asked actually our community partners who actually produce their own events and performances, primarily in the theater, to nominate artists that they felt should be part of the festival that hadn't been at YBCA before. And so we started with a huge list. I think there were about 70 artists that we started with. And then in our department, the four of us, we have a department of four, took it from there and created this four-night activities, 16 acts, and it's just incredible because it is everything from, you know, music, jazz, comedy, theater, dance, performance art, visual art. I mean, it has everything in this festival.
So. And a little hip-hop, I understand. Mark, why don't you tell us what's going on in the hip-hop front?
Yeah, you know, the ambition to represent the Bay Area might show up this weekend with the Performance Festival, but it really extends throughout our season and even through September. Next weekend, we're presenting Boots Riley, Dead Prez, W. Kamau Bell, Classical Revolution in a program called the Cool Shadowbox, which might be described as a haunted house on top of an Occupy camp.
Oh my, okay.
Yeah, punk, funk, rock installation. The artist John Paul Bale, David Slaza, it's going to be off the chain.
So that's next week, isn't
it? That's next weekend. Yeah. That's August 16th.
Wow.
Yeah.
And further highlights of this weekend's festival, Isabel, maybe you could share.
Well, I brought in some music. If you want to play a little bit of it, I can talk a little bit about our jazz salons are happening every day. So we're starting the evening with jazz. And I'm really particularly excited about this because this was in collaboration again with our artist in residence, Myra Melford, who chose the artist to be a part of the jazz salon. We received a Doris Duke Award for a 2-year residency with Myra Melford to create a new space for jazz intelligentsia at YBCA. And we have really come up with an amazing program, including tonight with a wonderful vocalist from Venezuela. Her name is Maria Marquez, who has been in the Bay Area for many, many years. Her voice is completely unique. I don't think there is anyone else that sounds like Maria Marquez. She combines the Venezuelan folklore, which you'll hear in this song, Tonada, and jazz, and creates this hybrid of sound and music that is very representative of this Bay Area. There's so many influences here. And so each night we'll feature a different jazz artist. Tomorrow we have Cecilia Engelhart, who is actually another incredible vocalist, used to be in the Meredith Monk Ensemble, has performed with many, many jazz artists throughout the world, as well as Molly Holm, who used to be part of Bobby McFerrin's Voistra. That's on Saturday night. And then the wonderful guitarist John Schott on Sunday afternoon, who used to be a part of T.J. Kirk and has been very active in the Bay Area jazz scene.
Sounds like we need to camp out at YBCA.
You need to camp out. You need to camp
some
out.
Of the things. Well, let's hear. We'll talk more after. We'll hear a little bit of the music of Maria Marquez, featured as part of Bay Area Now 7, the Performance Festival this weekend at the Yerba Buena Center. Then more with Isabel Irigoyen and Mark Bamuti Joseph.
Cuando la sabana negra se anda siempre en travesía, el rendejo de montaña turbia de serranía turbia. Se aproxima el aguacero y
That's Bay Area artist and teacher Maria Marquez, a Venezuelan native. She teaches at La Peña. She'll be performing tonight at 6:30 with her trio, with Rich Coons at piano and Coco Linares on guitar. Some wonderful music there.
Yeah, she's amazing. And then to top it all off, we follow up with this evening at 8 o'clock with the jazz great Sheldon Brown on reeds, and spoken word artist and musician Rico Pavón, who's also another Bay Area celebrated artist, Lenora Lee Dance, and the Brazilian dancer and choreographer Tania Santiago. So it's kind of a Latin experience tonight.
I guess so. All the details are at the Yerba Buena website.
Yes.
YBCA.org.
Yes.
So the music continues into not only this weekend but beyond with Bay Area Now 7.
Yeah, the thrust of performing arts in the Bay Area clearly is rich, even as evidenced by your show today, right? There's a wide breadth of material and thriving artists that are present here, and we're fortunate to have an elite facility within this ecology to present that work. So Bay Area Now is really a capstone for the work that we do all year long. We'll be presenting Christine Marie, who's native to the Bay Area, in December, Dohi Lee in November. We'll be working with Daniel Alarcón, who lives here in Oakland, also in November. But the Bay Area Now focus lasts from now through October. So at the end of September, we'll be working with the choreographer Jody Lomask and her group Capacitor to present the world premiere of Synaptic Motion. And just next week, we'll be working with The Coup and The Shadow Box. So it's really a series of exciting evenings that are locally focused on a global scale.
Never a dull moment, that's for sure.
No, oh, not yet.
So you mentioned earlier some hip-hop that'll be a part of all that. You want to introduce what we're going to hear next?
Sure. Well, you know, the Coup, I describe them as your favorite leftist, right? You know, Boots Riley is an enigmatic figure here in the Bay Area, certainly inspiring to many, has collaborated with Talib Kweli and Tom Morello and Zach De La Rocha, among, you know, many, many artists throughout the world. And this piece that we're about to hear, The Magic Clap, is part of a more than 25-year long catalog of funk, punk, and hip-hop music that The Coup has been producing and and sharing with the world. Yeah, and it's just one of my favorite tunes, so please enjoy.
Come on, kids! Sparks fly, will ignite the future.
future forever. This is the last kiss. Martin never gave a Coretta. It's like a paparazzi picture when I flash my Beretta. I got scars on my back, the truth on my tongue. I had the money in my hand when that alarm got wrong. I'm gonna refine freedom from my lungs. The homeland security, we are the bomb. This here the meeting for the overthrow. Waiting on the concrete coast to grow. Doing lies that ain't possible. Coming up all that dough you owe, you ain't supposed to know. It's supposed to
be. Just a touch of the mashup of some hip hop steeped in Oakland funk. Oh, I think we call it
steeped in Oakland funk. That's right.
Yeah, nice stuff.
That's right.
So,
but, you know, but the, you know, the thing with that particular piece or with the coup's shadow boxes, it is an immersive experience. And so while the coup has sold out the Fillmore, let's say, on, you know, one stage, at the shadow box, there'll be two stages, there'll be actors, there'll be Guantanamo go-go dancers. So he's really going all out to edge up the kind of political devices of his audiences while reinventing the performance experience that the coup has brought to us for so long.
Very nice. That's Mark Bamuti Joseph, performing arts curator. You've also been talking with Isabel Irigoyen, the Yerba Buena Center's Associate Director of Performing Arts. Well, we wish you a fantastic festival this weekend and beyond, given that all the breadth of happenings at Yerba Buena Center.
Thank you so much.
Very grateful. Thank you.
We're going to go out with a little bit more music of Maria Marquez, with a reminder that the Bay Area Now 7 Performance Festival runs through this weekend and beyond. So learn more at their website, ybca.org. Peter Robinson standing by with a movie review and some fun activities for some visitors to San Francisco. Stay with us here on Open Air.
Es como descifrar signos sin ser sabio competente. Volver a ser de repente tan frágil como un segundo. Volver a sentir profundo como un niño frente a Dios. Eso es lo que siento yo en este instante fecundo. Se va enredando.
Music of Maria Marquez, which you can catch tonight at 6:30 at the Yerba Buena Center. Information at ybca.org. David LaTulipe here now with Peter Robinson, who's going to offer us first a movie review. Hi, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here. We're going to be looking at or reviewing A Most Wanted Man. And this will probably be the last major movie for people who are Philip Seymour Hoffman fans, will have the chance to see him in a full movie. He did make one more after his tragic death. It's called Mockingly, but his role in that one was truncated because of his early death. Now, this story, the story of A Most Wanted Man, is based on a 2008 John le Carré novel. It's set in Hamburg. And I think Hamburg plays almost like a character in the movie. The movie essentially is that quintessential grey. It's a moral grey. It's a world of black and white fade-outs. And in every sense, the characters blend in. And the reason I think Hamburg is important is if we go back before the bombings of 2009, 9/11, the original terrorist did live there for 10 years and did the planning. So it's a city in Germany, which in other Le Carré novels is also featured as a nest for spies. Philip Seymour Hoffmore is an old-style spymaster, very much in the vein of George Smiley. He believes in watching, letting things happen, following it through. And he has set up a highly effective anti-terrorist squad, which is now on the tail of a newly arrived Chechen terrorist who has escaped, in his case, from Russia and is seeking political asylum. At the heart of the story is the conflict between this old-style spymaster and then the high-speed German intelligence unit who are closely linked to the CIA. The CIA operative is played by Robin Wright. And they are interested in instant results. They want to stop things immediately. As a spymaster, Hoffman wants to track things, find out where the money is coming from. And at the centre of the story is a banker played by William Dafoe, who is really the source for channeling the money. So this is a movie about follow the money and see which terrorist groups it goes to. It's not a movie about car chases, and it's not a movie about gunshots and gunfights. It's when I say an intellectual spy story, we're looking at the theory of spying. And as you get drawn in, there seems to be a slim line between what we now know about Philip Seymour Hoffman in his real life and how we see him in the movie. Chain-smoking, hard-drinking, meticulous, and has built a team of loyal followers who really, as the key word in the film, want to make the world a safer place. Mm. And when we hear that as a resounding and almost the mantra, because the CIA officer, Robin Wright, also wants to make the world a safer place. And I always hark back to the days of Vietnam when the world was going to be made safer for democracy. Of course, there's two different meanings on that. One in the CIA wants instant results. The other person wants to go the old type of George Smiley route where you track things and see how it unfolds and then move. I highly recommend this film. It's a sad movie to watch if you are a Philip Seymour Hoffman fan. His character, although in many ways a depressing character, a disappointed character, you warm to his acting and you feel the part. And as the rain falls on a grey, miserable Hamburg, you know that another great spy story is about to be unleashed. One note for those who like to read, I would also recommend reading the John le Carré book. It did come out in 2008. It is called, of the same title, A Most Wanted Man. But one difference I noted is at the end of the book, they use the word rendition. They don't use it in the movie. And today, as usual, history has caught up with what we were talking about. And as the current political crisis emerges, as we look today to see what is the meaning of the word torture, of course, deep at the heart of that is the question of rendition and which countries were people renditioned to. See it, enjoy it, and take your time working out, as always, there's no spoilers in this review, who betrays whom.
A Most Wanted Man, Philip Seymour Hoffman's final work that we'll see, I think, also starring Willem Dafoe. Thank you for that, Peter. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Oh, good, good.
I understand you have some activities for those who might be visiting our fair city.
Yeah, we do indeed. And as I say, statistically, throughout the year, some 16 million people visit the Greater Bay Area, but 8.5 million are here during the months of August and September. So last week I was talking about things happening inside the city, the different type of bus tours you can go on. So I'm going to suggest that this time, if you have guests, that you put them in the car and take a 40-mile drive. And I'm going to give you a route which always works for me. So you head north, out through, over the Golden Gate Bridge, get your great photograph, and then head out towards Stinson Beach. You go through a route which takes you through the Muir Woods, which I think is just wonderful countryside as a way of introduction. And then you're overlooking the beginning of the surfers down on the beach. And before you know where you are, you're passing the Bird Conservatory on the way to Bolinas. Now, maybe worth pointing out, you don't know you're in Bolinas because they always take down the road signs. So if you stumble into Bolinas, then you'll be amongst the people who've just come out of Smithies or one of the famous drinking halts there. But it's time to get back in your car, and now we're going to head north towards Lima. Lima's interesting little town. If you're looking for a luncheon, I highly recommend the Lima Inn before heading out to where I see as my destination, which is Point Reyes. The whole area around Point Reyes has been reserved as a national park, and this, of course, was partly the result of the Kennedy legislation back in the 1960s. And it is just a wonderful, wonderful combination of seawalk, sandy beaches, forests, hikes. In fact, in the 65,000 acres that covers the whole of this area, there are over 36 different types of hiking trail that you can take. And historically, I like, if I can, to arrive early in the morning, particularly this time of year, as the fog is rising along Tomales Bay. It's got a kind of magical sense to it. You can see the sandpipers along the beach. But it also reminds me just a little bit of the history, because back in 1579, this is the disputed area where Sir Francis Drake landed. And I bring the history in because there is a log. It's the chaplain's log from that voyage. And the opening lines in the log are stinking fog and then cliffs that reminded him of the White Cliffs of Dover. And that, of course, is Drake's Bay. And to me, that is really concluding evidence that this is probably what happened, that Drake missed the entry to the San Francisco Bay because of the fog and ended up in Point Reyes, and not at Larkspur, where, of course, they've erected his statue. So there's just a little bit of the history. Places to stop at, Rancho Nicasio, a good place both for lunch, but also in the evening, live entertainment, often folk bands. And if you want to wander around Point Reyes or Tomales Bay itself, there is the Marconi radio station, which is where the first bit of radio happened. But beyond that, you're in a world of wildflowers, deers. In fact, the setting for one of the more famous poems by Robert Bly called Point Reyes itself. So escape from the city, get away from the crowds, hop in the car, travel north, go through Stinson, onto Lima, out to Point Reyes, and I think you've seen another half of the Bay Area, which sometimes visitors forget still exists. And above all, you cross the Golden Gate Bridge across the San Francisco Bay.
Indeed. Thank you, Peter, for advice for getting some people out of our fair city as well as visiting in San Francisco. See you again soon.
It's good. Good to see you.
Go out with a little bit of Count Basie and I Left My Heart in San Francisco. This has been Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. Thanks, as always, to birthday boy Neil Swinkles, my producer of Open Air, for making things run smoothly. Reminder that all of our programs are archived at our website, kalw.org. Send me an email, david@kalw.org. If you've got a performing arts organization or some event that you would like featured, happy to entertain the option, david@kalw.org. Enjoy a little Basie as we say goodbye.